On a benchmark called Strategy QA, you can ask a small llama model a question, and it gets the right answer about 81% of the time. The answer takes 4 tokens. Now tell that same model to think step by step. Same model, same questions. Accuracy drops to 70%. Token count jumps to 226. Worse answers, 50 times the cost.
That's the empirical fact that opens a paper out of Peking University and Samsung Research called When Do LLMs Reason? A Dynamical Systems View via Entropy Phase Transitions. It went up on Archive on May 20th, 2026, and we're recording 5 days later. Quick ground rules before we get into it. You're listening to AI Papers, a deep dive. The script is from Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7. I'm Finn, and Juniper and I are AI voices from 11 Labs. The producer is not affiliated with Anthropic or 11 Labs. And what makes that strategy QA result more than a curiosity is that it's not an isolated case. It's a clue about something the field has been quietly missing.
Here's the puzzle the authors lead with. Chain of thought prompting, telling the model to show its work, has become the default move. It's how you get better answers out of a language model, supposedly. Newer reasoning models bake it in. They reason by reflex. But the literature has been piling up an awkward fact. On a lot of tasks, chain of thought either doesn't help or actively hurts. Math, formal logic, multi-step problems? Big wins. Common sense questions, factual recall, open-ended stuff? Often a wash, sometimes worse. And worse means worse. Degraded answers while paying 10 to 100 times more in tokens.
And the natural reaction is, fine, so chain of thought is for math, not trivia. We can sort tasks into the ones where it helps and the ones where it doesn't, and route accordingly. But the authors push on that and find something stranger. This same benchmark flips sign across models. A task where chain of thought is essential for one model is a task where it's counterproductive for another. So this task needs reasoning isn't actually a property of the task. And this model can reason isn't actually a property of the model. It's a property of the pair, this model, this query. And the only way you'd ever know is by reading something out of the decoding process itself.
Which sets up the practical question. Can you tell, before you commit to generating 200 tokens of chain of thought, whether it's going to help on this particular query for this particular model? Cheaply, without training a separate classifier, without offline profiling, just from the model itself.
That's exactly what the authors go after. And the move they make is striking. They argue you can read the answer out of the model's uncertainty in the first 64 tokens of generation. Not the tokens themselves, the shape of the uncertainty curve underneath them.
So let's stay with that for a second, because this is the empirical core. Every time a language model generates a token, it isn't picking the token directly. It's producing a probability distribution over its entire vocabulary, tens of thousands of possible next words, and then sampling from that distribution. The shape of that distribution carries information the final text doesn't. If the model puts 99% of the probability on one word, it's confident. If it spreads probability evenly across dozens of candidates, it's hedging. There's a standard way to summarize that spread in a single number, Shannon entropy. Low entropy, the model has basically committed. High entropy, it's still casting around.
And that confidence reading is available at every single token. So you can string 64 of them together and get a curve, a kind of confidence heartbeat. The model is solving a problem in real time, and you're watching its pulse.
The paper's main empirical observation is that this heartbeat comes in visually distinct families. Plot the average entropy over the first 64 tokens for tasks where chain of thought massively helps, math word problems, formal logic, and you get a clean downward slope. The model is locking onto something. Plot it for tasks where chain of thought hurts, common sense, factual recall, and you get jagged oscillation or even rising entropy. The model is thrashing.
And remember the cross-model finding. Switch from llama to quen, the curves switch with you. The pattern isn't bound to the task. It's bound to the interaction between this model and this query. The entropy trajectory is reading out something about the pairing that neither the task label nor the model name captures on its own.
The authors reach for a phase transition analogy here, and I want to be careful about how I voice it because they're careful too. They're framing, and they say analogous to, not is that early decoding looks like the system either falls into a low entropy structured regime where reasoning crystallizes, or it stays in a high entropy exploratory regime where it just sloshes. Like water near freezing. Add a little energy, the molecules slosh around as liquid. Take a little out, they suddenly lock into a crystal lattice. Same atoms, qualitatively different state.
Right, and Juniper, I want to flag the hedge there because I think the analogy is doing more rhetorical work than mechanistic work. A real phase transition has an order parameter, a control parameter, singular behavior at a critical point. What the paper actually shows is that entropy trajectories cluster into a couple of visual families. That's a clustering claim. It's not nothing. The clustering is real. The empirical observation is solid. But phase transition is the kind of physics-flavored language that can make a result sound more theoretically grounded than it is. The empirical observation doesn't need the analogy to land.
Fair. And the authors do leave themselves room. They don't claim to have derived a critical point. They're using the metaphor as a framing device. The load-bearing claim is the clustering, not the physics. Where the framing earns its keep, though, is in motivating what to measure. If you think the system is in one of two regimes, the natural question becomes, which regime am I in right now? And that's where the three statistics come from.
Yeah, this is the part I want to walk through carefully, because the descriptors are clever, and the authors give them a really clean kinematic framing. Position, velocity, acceleration.
Finn, want to take that one?
Sure. Imagine the entropy trajectory as a car driving down a road. The first descriptor is cumulative entropy, basically how far the car has traveled through uncertain territory by the end of the probe window, total distance covered. If cumulative entropy is huge, the model has been deeply uncertain across the whole 64-token window. It's been driving through fog the entire time. The second descriptor is the trend direction, the velocity. The authors use a robust trend statistic that asks, does entropy reliably decrease as we go from token 1 to token 64? Robust because it looks at ordering, not magnitudes, so a single weird spike won't fool it. A strongly negative value means the curve is reliably falling. The car is decisively heading toward clarity. A positive value means it's rising. The car is heading deeper into fog. The third descriptor is smoothness, the acceleration profile. Is the curve gliding smoothly, or is it jerking around at every step? Because here's the subtle point. You can have a strong downward trend on a wildly oscillating curve. The trend statistic will say, going down. But the curve is so jittery that you shouldn't really trust that signal. It's noise that happens to slope down. The smoothness statistic acts as a stability prior. Only believe the velocity if the ride is smooth.
And that's the move that makes the framework work. A single descriptor, just the trend, would conflate model is converging with model is thrashing in a direction that happens to look like converging. Adding the smoothness check separates those. And cumulative entropy catches a third failure mode that pure trend analysis would miss entirely. When the model is so confused early on that more reasoning isn't going to rescue it. Trend might be ambiguous, smoothness might be middling, but if the cumulative uncertainty is enormous, you should just take the direct answer and run.
Three numbers, three failure modes, one decision. The routing rule is essentially a small decision tree. If entropy is falling cleanly relative to how noisy the curve is, route to chain of thought. Reasoning will converge. If it's rising, or if cumulative uncertainty is huge, route to direct decoding. Reasoning will drift or won't help. Anything ambiguous in between, fall back to a neutral default they call standard, which is just letting the model do its natural thing without forcing either mode.
And the whole thing is training free, no classifier. The thresholds get calibrated on something like 50 queries, 1 to 7% of a typical benchmark, and then the router runs off the model's own decoding dynamics. The authors call the system EDRM, but for our purposes, the name matters less than the shape.
There's a learned variant where they train a small neural network to do the routing instead of the handcrafted tree. And the result is actually kind of interesting. When they look at the learned decision boundaries, those boundaries roughly track the hand-tuned thresholds. The authors take that as evidence that the descriptor space is real, that they're not just hand-fitting an arbitrary rule.
Which is a nice piece of internal validation. The handcrafted thresholds aren't an artifact of overfitting to one benchmark. When you let the data tell you where to draw the lines, it draws them in roughly the same place.
Now, here's where I want to push, because there's a piece of the system the authors include that does a lot of work, and I think it deserves a beat of skepticism. They call it fallback compensation. It's a branch inside the routing logic. When the router would otherwise commit fully to chain of thought or standard, the rule instead keeps a cheap, direct path live as a safety net within the decision.
Wait, a parallel direct branch baked into the routing rule itself?
That's the structure. Think of it like a doctor's office where, when you come in with a complaint, the protocol says, run the best guess specialized test, but also draw a basic blood panel as part of the same workup, just in case. The direct path is cheap. Short answer, few tokens. So the cost overhead is small, but the safety net is substantial. The ablation in the paper removes that direct fallback branch from the routing rule, and accuracy drops by 3.5 to almost 5 points across models. Which means a meaningful chunk of the headline accuracy gain isn't coming from the routing decision per se. It's coming from the hedging built into the branch.
So the steel man against the paper would be, maybe the routing isn't really picking the right strategy. Maybe the cheap direct safety branch is doing most of the heavy lifting, and the routing is just deciding when to spend the extra tokens on top.
That's the steel man, and I think it's a fair concern, but I don't think it kills the result. Two reasons. One, the cost accounting is honest. The token numbers they report include the probe and include the direct branch when the rule keeps it live. They're not hiding the cost. Two, even if you grant that the safety net is doing real work, the question becomes, is the safety net plus router better than alternatives that include comparable hedging? And on that, they do beat the closest prior method, which is a simpler two-way router based on a single trend metric.
Token signature, I think.
Right, token signature, from the prior year. EDRM is essentially the richer three descriptor version. And the ablation showing that removing any one of the three descriptors hurts performance is what makes me believe the three-dimensional manifold is real rather than ornamental.
There's a quieter point hiding in the fallback story that I think is actually more interesting than the critique. The system the authors built isn't really pick the right mode for this query. It's pick a strategy that's likely to succeed, but keep a cheap direct branch in the rule in case you guessed wrong. That's a more honest description of what's deployable. In production, you don't trust your router blindly. You keep a fast fallback. The authors just made that architectural choice visible and measured what it's worth.
Fair. Let me make this concrete with one of the most striking numbers in the paper, because the abstract framing can get away from what the system actually does. There's a model called Qwen3-4b. It's a reasoning-tuned model, specifically trained to produce long chains of reasoning by default. On their benchmark suite, in pure chain-of-thought mode, Qwen3-4b averages about 640 tokens per query. The MLP variant of their router cuts that to roughly 425, about a third fewer tokens. Accuracy basically unchanged, 81.2% versus 81.35%.
On a model that's literally trained to be verbose.
Exactly. That variant watches the entropy heartbeat for 64 tokens, decides a meaningful fraction of queries don't actually need the elaborate reasoning the model wants to produce, and chops the verbosity by a third with no accuracy loss. The other learned variant trades a sliver of accuracy for even fewer tokens.
And that's the result that makes the practical case for me. Reasoning models are getting deployed at scale right now, and the cost of running them is dominated by output token count. A routing layer that doesn't require retraining, doesn't add a separate model to host, doesn't change the architecture, and trims a third off your token bill, That's a real number for anyone running these systems.
The biggest token savings actually show up on the smaller base models. Llama 3.23b sees a 55% reduction, from about 250 tokens down to 113, while gaining a point of accuracy over straight chain of thought. Roughly half the cost, slightly better answers.
Across 15 benchmarks and 4 models, the range is 27 to 55% token reduction, with accuracy holding or improving. Some benchmarks see really dramatic accuracy swings. On GPQA with the small Llama, direct decoding gets 34%, standard gets 26%, chain of thought gets 25%. The router gets 39 to 42 depending on configuration. Chain of thought is the worst fixed strategy on that benchmark, and the router beats every single fixed mode by a wide margin.
Which is sort of the thesis statement of the paper. Reasoning shouldn't be the default. Reasoning should be selectively invoked when the model's own decoding dynamics suggest it'll converge. The authors phrase it as, reason only when needed.
And the broader conceptual move underneath that is the part I find most generative. The dominant frame in language model evaluation has been, this task needs reasoning. That task doesn't. Here's a benchmark that tests reasoning. The paper pushes against that. Whether a query benefits from explicit reasoning isn't a task property and isn't a model property. It's a property of the interaction, and that interaction is observable from inside the decoding process itself.
Reasoning as a state, not a capability.
Right. And if reasoning is a state the model enters during generation, rather than a fixed capability, then a whole new design space opens up. You can intervene to encourage the state. You can detect when an attempt has failed early and recover. You can build adaptive systems that don't just decide whether to reason, but how much, when to stop, when to retry. The entropy trajectory as diagnostic idea is also suggestive on its own. If early decoding dynamics can predict whether reasoning will help, what other emergent model behaviors might be predictable from the first 64 tokens?
Although, Juniper, I want to put one weight on the brakes here. The experiments are all on open source models in the 3 to 8 billion parameter range. Llama 3.23b, Llama 3.18b, Qwen 2.57b, Qwen 3.4b. We don't know whether the same entropy signatures show up cleanly in frontier-scale models. We don't know whether they show up at all in API-only models where you can't see the next token distribution from outside. The authors acknowledge this. It's a real limitation. The story might generalize beautifully. It might also be partly an artifact of how smaller models behave under the hood.
That's the honest read. The reframing is generative. The empirical observation is solid on the models they tested. And the next question is whether the heartbeat looks the same on bigger systems.
A few other things worth flagging in the critique column. The thresholds in the heuristic router are tuned per model class. They use one cumulative entropy cap for base models and a different one for reasoning-tuned models, set by binary search on benchmark results. That's not fatal, but it's the kind of hyperparameter that needs setting per model family. And the paper is doing some empirical fitting that the training-free framing can obscure.
The 50-sample calibration is also fitting, technically. It's a small amount of fitting. The procedure is transparent. But no training doesn't mean no tuning.
And the 64-token probe isn't free. On a benchmark where direct answers are 4 tokens long, you're paying a 16-fold overhead before you've answered anything. The token savings numbers honestly account for that. They include the probe cost. But it does mean the framework's efficiency wins are concentrated on tasks where the chain of thought response would have been long anyway. On already short tasks, you're spending more, not less.
Which is consistent with their own framing. The point isn't to make every query cheaper. The point is to stop spending hundreds of tokens on questions where the model didn't need them.
Right. And honestly, the most important thing the paper does isn't the cost savings. It's the diagnostic. The claim that you can read out a meaningful state variable from the first 64 tokens of decoding. That's a hook the field could pull on for years.
Finn, I want to come back to one thing about the phase transition framing, because the right way to hold it has gotten clearer to me as we've talked.
The framing is wrong in the strict physics sense. There's no order parameter, no critical exponent, no singular behavior. But it's right in the sense that matters, which is that it points the empirical attention at the right object. The thing to measure isn't the average entropy, it isn't the final entropy. It's the shape of the trajectory, treated as a state classification problem. The physics language is a scaffold for that intuition. If the field eventually replaces it with better language, the empirical contribution still stands.
That's a generous reading, and I think it's right. The framing earned the empirical observation. Whether the framing itself survives is a separate question.
So where does this leave us? The pragmatic story is clean. A training-free, model-agnostic routing technique that cuts token costs by a third to a half on long-form reasoning tasks, with accuracy holding or improving. Needs about 50 calibration queries. Works across 4 models and 15 benchmarks. The cost is a 64 token probe per query in the instance level setting, and a direct fallback branch inside the routing rule that's doing measurable work alongside the routing itself. The conceptual story is that reasoning and language models might be productively understood as a decoding state rather than a static capability, observable from inside generation, not just from outputs.
And the open question is whether the heartbeat scales. Whether what they see in a 3 billion parameter llama also shows up in something hundreds of times larger, or in a reasoning model with a hidden chain of thought you can't even watch from the outside. If it does, this paper is the start of a research program. If it doesn't, it's still a sharp result on small open models with a striking conceptual reframing. Either way, the thing I'll be carrying out of it is the picture, a confidence curve. 64 tokens long, telling you whether the model has found its footing or whether it's still casting around.
Link to the paper is in the show notes, along with some related reading on test time compute and decoding dynamics if you want to keep pulling on this thread. And if you want the full transcript with the inline definitions, plus the concept pages that connect this episode to the others we've done in this area, that's all on paperdive.ai. Thanks for listening to AI Papers. A deep dive.